heading into the weekend, and we got the clocks changing. We are springing ahead. And so on the surface, right, we're excited, going to have daylight longer in the day, or I should say later in the day, really, because we still have the same kind of amount. We're just switching it up a bit. But it's going to be lighter later. However, we want to make sure that you are prepared for what this is going to do to your sleep cycle, your drowsiness, things like that. And so we are checking in with Stanford Health. Dr. Rocha is with us. And Dr. Rocha, always appreciate chatting with you. How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm good. You sound like you're ready for the clocks to change.
I'm always trying to be ready in anticipation of patient needs. And
yeah, you're on top of it every year. I appreciate you for that. So talk about, first of all, just the effects that time change will have on an overall person's well-being.
So it varies from person to person. We all know that person who wakes up spontaneously before their alarm clock, ready to go, they get enough sleep, and that time change may not have much of an impact on them. However, if you're one of those people who hits the snooze, who is working two jobs, is curtailing their sleep, that 1 hour can be devastating, to the point where it's dangerous driving to work or maybe driving home at night, because now you're getting a really short amount of time of sleep, and that can really impact your cognitive function as well as your safety driving.
So obviously sleep, you know, I think is tied to so many things. You know, we talk about how stress is like one of the top killers in America. And one of the biggest solutions is, are you getting enough sleep? Like, we're finding more and more, I think, that sleep is such an integral part of basically everything getting better in your life. So with that being said, from your mood, your mental health, you know, heart health, everything, how do you prepare properly for the clocks to change? I know that probably seems like a very silly question to ask you, Dr. Rocha, who, again, is with Stanford Health, the director of sleep medicine. So he knows a thing or two about this. How do you properly prepare before the clocks change to make sure your body, or that you give yourself the best, I think, possible scenario to really adjust properly and not really see kind of a lapse of your health, I guess, in a downward spiral, if you will? How do you prep properly?
So this technique is useful not only for the change in the clock, but also, let's say you're traveling east and you're going to Europe. The best way of mitigating some of the negative effects of sleep deprivation is to make that change more gradual. So, for example, 2 days before you're about to switch to clocks, you get up 30 minutes early. A day before, now it's 45 minutes early. So then when the actual change takes place, you're only seeing a shift of 15 minutes. So by making it more gradual, the sleep deprivation is not as dramatic, and therefore that drive to work or your drive home is not impacted as much, or your work during that day. If you have an important meeting, perhaps you have to come up with ideas really quickly. If you're sleep deprived, you're not going to be able to do it. But if you're only 15 minutes sleep deprived, that's something your body should be able to tolerate much easier.
Dr. Rocha, do you mind if I get away from the clocks for a second and we just talk about, in general, sleep?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Okay, fantastic, because I have questions. So, Dr. Rocha, first of all, if you let's start with a very basic question. What is the ideal amount of sleep for adults?
So this is a source of problems for many patients, because people will hear that, oh, I need 8 hours of sleep. I have to get 8 hours of sleep. And they force themselves to go to bed early and stay in bed because they want to get this magical 8 hours. Everyone is different. Like almost every other aspect of life, everyone is different. There are people who do very well with 7 hours. There are those that need 9 hours. So you have to find your sweet spot. How do you figure that out? The best way is to know, hey, am I waking up at an alarm clock every morning? If the alarm clock has to wake you up, then that generally means you're depriving yourself of sleep. Are you getting sleepy in the afternoon? Those are clues, or you're getting sleepy driving. Those are clues that you're not getting enough sleep. The majority of people need around 8 hours, but that can range from 7 to 9 hours easily.
Okay. So what if you don't hit that? Like, what if you know that you're not even close? You're like, I'm maybe getting 3 or 4 hours of sleep, and even that is all broken up. What are some things you can do to improve that?
So it depends. Are you getting 3 or 4 hours of sleep because you're working two jobs and you're not giving yourself the opportunity to sleep? Or are you not sleeping well because of insomnia, because of medical problems, because of stress? The answer is very different depending on the situation. If you're working many hours and you're not giving yourself the opportunity, then obviously you have to recognize that you're putting yourself, others at danger, as well as your family with the loss of possibly a child or a parent. And so you really have to put an emphasis. As you said earlier, we're beginning to know how important sleep is, and it's becoming more popular. So you have to force yourself to make some time. And that may mean scheduling a nap in the afternoon so that you can get more sleep in a 24-hour period of time. If, however, the reason why you're not sleeping well is insomnia, is medical problems, well, that is more complicated and more individualized, and you really best figure that out in conjunction with a practitioner, because you might need medication to sleep. You might have some anxiety. You might have a medical problem that needs to be addressed, like pain. So it depends on the problem. I hope I'm giving you an answer. And not
you are. No. Because I think, first of all, you're explaining that one size doesn't fit all, which is true. And yeah. And the reason I'm asking you about, you know, how do you fix it? And you touched on it for a second, which I want to do a deeper dive. There are so many misconceptions around napping. I am a hardcore napper, Dr. Rocha. I wake up at 3:30 in the morning. So I love me a good nap. I was just having an argument actually with somebody about this yesterday because they swear by power naps. I could never do it. These people who can do 15-minute naps, I give you all the praise in the world. I'm not one of them. I can't bypass. If I'm in a good nap, Dr. Rocha, I mean, I'm down for the count for a solid hour and a half, 2 hours maybe. I have that flexibility and ability because I get out of work early enough. My kid doesn't get out of school till 3:30. So I've got that flexibility and I take advantage of it. Is that a bad thing or is that a good thing? Because there's always that misconception of the power nap versus the short slumber, if you will.
Your situation is unique because of your hours. So you are running significantly sleep deprived. You need to catch up on some sleep. So for you, that hour and a half is perfect because that enables you to get a healthy amount of sleep in a 24-hour period of time. There are those people who get maybe 7.5 or maybe 8 hours, but they need a little bit of a top off in the afternoon when almost everyone gets a little bit groggy. And so their sleep debt is not as much. So 10 minutes, 15 minutes works well. If you're really sleep deprived and you try to get a 20-minute, 30-minute nap, you may get into deep sleep really quickly and wake up very groggy.
Right.
So for you, you need more time and you're getting it. So you figured it out perfect. It works well for you. It's made you healthier and bright-eyed and energetic. And so that works well for you. Keep doing what you're doing.
There's nothing I love more than being told I'm perfect. That's all I heard. That's all I heard in this whole conversation is you are perfect. So, Dr. Rocha, you win. Thank you so much. In a serious thing, because one of the concerns that people will have, and there are plenty of people who fall in this category that I do, you know, whether they're nurses. I know I have a lot of nurses who talk, you know, teachers who are up really early, but they're doing a lot of paperwork at night. You know, police, firefighters. There's a lot of people who do fall in that category of you've got a weird schedule. You're up at like 4 o'clock. I mean, anything even like that, you fall in that category of, you know, you're working late at night or you don't really shut that TV off till 10:30, 11 o'clock. And now all of a sudden you're up at 4. So many people I do think could fall into the same category that I'm in. But I've always wondered, though, when you have that breakup. So say you do get the 5-6 hours of sleep, but you could bank another hour and a half, maybe 2 hours in the day before the kids come home. That's not a bad thing. You like that collectively, you're looking at a 24-hour cycle, not a consistent, did I get 8 hours straight? That's okay.
I agree with you completely. I think if you start looking at the medical literature, they talk about associations of people who need naps with negative consequences. However, and I don't want to get too much in the weeds. Those are observational studies where they follow patients and they see problems. But that doesn't account for all the situations, and it can be misleading. Mm. So, again, you have to know your body and figure things out. The fact that you are putting an emphasis on getting enough sleep and you're doing it, the fact of the matter is, we all tend to have a dip in alertness in the afternoon. There were entire societies based on afternoon, coming home, eating a meal, taking a nap, and then going back to work, because we all have a dip. Our society doesn't allow us to take advantage of that. You know, taking a nap in the afternoon is looked upon still with some skepticism. But the reality is, having that afternoon nap instead of a cup of coffee is far better for you. So again, you've worked things out for you. Don't let anybody take that away.
No, I won't. You literally told me I was perfect. So I'm anything anybody tells me, I'm not listening to them anymore. We're chatting with Dr. Dominic Rocha, Director of Sleep Medicine at Stanford Health. We know the clocks are changing and we want to prep our bodies for that. But in general, you know, we're told all the time, whether we're having conversations with other doctors, healthcare professionals on this show, or even in our day to day, everything comes back to sleep, right? Let's bring our stress down. Sleep more. Let's do this. Sleep more. It always comes back to sleep. Sleep is a huge part of our health, and sometimes we don't focus on it enough. So I have Dr. Rocha here. We got away from the clocks, and I want to talk about sleep in general because I think it's important. I got to talk about supplements, Dr. Rocha, because this to me is also fascinating personally, but also out in the world. So first of all, I'm going to start with melatonin. What do you think about it?
So we use melatonin in the sleep center on a periodic basis, meaning that if patients are traveling east or and they have to get prepared for sleep earlier than their body wants to, you can use melatonin to try to shift your biological clock. So we will have patients use melatonin about 4 hours before their bedtime to help shift their clock for a couple of weeks. Or if you're a high school student and you're really having trouble going to sleep, we'll use it for short periods of time. I tend not to use any supplements for extended periods of time, because the problem with supplements, and this is the way our research works, you don't have a lot of oversight into what's in those supplements.
Yep, there it is.
For example, with melatonin, they found that if you get a jar of 3 milligrams melatonin, they found that there's anywhere from no melatonin to 10 times that amount. So it is just less regulation there. And so that becomes a little bit tricky. So we try to use it for a limited period of time. In addition to that, melatonin in studies looking at that to help people sleep has not been shown to work really well for adults as a sleeping pill. It can help move your clock for a period of time, but as a sleeping pill, it has not been shown to work well.
I also don't love the fact, Dr. Rocha, that we don't really have long-term studies on it. Like, I don't think it's going to kill anybody, but I don't love the fact that we really don't have long-term, at least in my understanding. That's why I stopped taking melatonin. When I first got into television and I was working an anchor shift at 1 o'clock in the morning, I tried melatonin just to kind of get my body into that. But once I realized that there was no long-term study, like we really didn't know the effectiveness, what it was going to mean down the road, I was like, nope, we'll figure it out. We'll just figure it out. So I've never taken it again. However, with that, I would love to know your thoughts on, I'm going to call them natural either vitamins or supplements. I don't know what you'd call them. Because again, sleep aids are one thing. That's that you call, consult with your doctor, people like you. That's a totally different subject. I won't go into that. But just kind of over-the-counter stuff. So magnesium, for example, effective, not effective?
So magnesium has been shown to help in a small percentage of people, particularly those patients whose diet is not varied enough and their magnesium levels are low. But in general, it doesn't make that big of an impact. Again, as you have been alluding to, when you try to get data on supplements, because there's no profit margin associated with these supplements, it's hard to find large studies, placebo-controlled studies, that demonstrate benefit. So you have small little studies, you know, 15, 20 patients showing that there is some improvement in deep sleep with supplements like magnesium, but the data is not really strong.
Okay, so the same thing would kind of go for, like, I can never say this correctly, but the L-theanine?
Yeah, so L-theanine.
Like chamomile, the valerian root, like any of those guys.
All of these, you know, you see studies and reads very small studies. Most of them are reports that, hey, this person took this, or we took these five people and we gave them this supplement and they felt much better or they slept much better. The problem, as you know, if you do placebo-controlled studies with insomnia, you'll find that placebo works 30% of the time.
Because it's mind over matter.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm taking it. It's working.
Yes, exactly right. And and having confidence to sleep is a very important thing. So if you take something and you believe it's going to help you sleep, it's going to lower down your blood pressure, your heart rate. It's going to calm you down because you're confident this is going to work. Mm. And that's why it's very tricky when you talk about supplements and sleeping better.
Okay, last one, Dr. Rocha, and I appreciate you. I don't know if this is under your purview, but especially because we've legalized it, what about, and for the record, just to be very clear with everybody, I don't do this. I actually am somebody who, I use what's called Moon Brew, which is like a, it's exactly what you talked about. It's got the magnesium, the L-theanine, the camo, it's got all that stuff. And I usually use a, like a sleepy tea. That's my combo. That's what I do. However, I do know of many people who go the cannabis route, and right. I've read that it can be effective putting you to sleep, but actually getting to REM sleep is not what's happening. That it actually doesn't help you get to that like REM sleep that you need. I just didn't know if that was true or not.
So the problem with marijuana and cannabinoids is that legally for national research, you can't do it. So all the studies are pretty much still done in small little groups. And it's not clear in terms of how well it helps people sleep. Mm-hmm. What is clear, if you take it regularly, if you smoke regularly, if you use supplements regularly, and you abruptly stop them, your sleep is much worse. So it can certainly impact you in a negative way if you stop it. Now, once it becomes legal nationally and it can be transported and you can do federal research on it, you'll probably get more data that is useful because, as you know, there's so many components to cannabinoids. Maybe there are some components that work really, really well and others not so much. But at this point in time, the studies are really small. They have not demonstrated that it definitely improves sleep, but they have demonstrated that if you take it regularly and then you abruptly stop, your sleep architecture, in other words, your amount of REM sleep and deep sleep, becomes significantly impaired.
Hmm. Well, I learned a lot, including that it is true. I am perfect. Dr. Dominic Rocha, on a serious note, thank you so much for talking about sleep in general, especially before the clocks change. And again, sleep being something we need to focus on more and more, the average person. I so appreciate all this information. Director of Sleep Medicine at Stanford Health. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again really soon.